Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant and Capital Party Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hey there, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you?
I'm feeling good.
I'm sorry that you were unable to join me for dinner, but I was invited to a wonderful dinner
last Sunday
at a restaurant called Tablo, which is a restaurant that's owned by Danny Meyer, where the executive chef is a gentleman named Floyd Cardoz, and Floyd's been on our show before. Super interesting guy, great
super nice
chef,
guy. Okay, can I tell you, not enough nice guy chefs in the world.
Yeah.
Super, super nice guy.
And very simpatico with the way we look at food and dining and all. I mean, he's really terrific guy. And now, Floyd was born in Bombay, went to cooking school in Bombay, came to the United States, and always had a vision that has he was the first really to realize. And his idea was to take, you know, he was trained in classical Western European, classical French cookery. And then he also knows all about, of course, Indian cookery because he is a chef. From Bombay, and his idea was to spice up, to combine those two cuisines, and bring Indian spices to classical French technique, and boy, does he ever do it well.
And it's interesting, and it is unique.
And that's Tablo, right? And so, and a lot of people said he was, you know, cuckoo, right? He's crazy. So
I'm going to tell you, Francis, it was years ago, you said, hey, let's try this restaurant, and I was like, this is not going to be my kind of restaurant, and I was wrong. Absolutely wrong. I went. It was great. We tried it together.
And there were challenges, you know, for them. And they have a great wine program. And their wine program, you know, to pair European wines with that cuisine, you know, it's a whole different palette of flavors that they paint with there. And so you've got to be smarter about it. When it works, it's really amazing. And they have a crack wine staff there, as they do at all of Danny Meyer's places. But we went. We had a great time. Well, I thought the food was interesting. It really delivered on the plate, and we had him on the show to talk about how he did that. Well, I recently got a press release from Sula Vineyards, and that's the brand name of a vineyard, of a winemaking concern in India. Indian wine, the warmest place in the world where wine is being made, is in a region called Nashik in India, and that sounds kind of crazy, right?
It sounds a little crazy.
The Portuguese brought wine to the west coast of India. And I think it's the Goa region is where you see a lot of Indian Catholics, you know. And that's like the only place in India where you're going to find great beef and pork, you know. And you'll also find wine. But the wine that was brought there is a little bit sort of mediocre grapes.
I mean, I'm going to tell you, I've never had an Indian wine. So.
Neither I. And they're by reports, they're not very good. You know, and there's a lot of spices and other stuff in the wine as well. However, India does produce table grapes for domestic consumption. They produce a lot of table grapes. Well, recently they went, this wine company, Sula, and Rajiv Samant is the CEO of Sula, had some property in this region, which is very unique for India because it's very high up. It's 2,000 feet up in elevation, which is the only reason they can grow grapes there. That's cool enough to grow grapes, that they would make top quality. He was in San Francisco working for a while, decided to go back to India and make this amazing wine. He was at the dinner, and we had Floyd Cardoz's food with the Sula Vineyards wines, and they were amazing.
Well, it's probably the perfect accompaniment, I would presume. You have these, we'll call them Western grape varieties, with this grown in India, and you're having them in this kind of Western Indian.
But it's a very new thing for India to do dry, still table wine of top quality. And Rajiv Samant is you know, really visionary. And what was amazing to me was to sit down with these two amazing personalities. And actually, great compliment. We went, we were invited, and I sat with Floyd and his wife. I sat with a chef and his wife, and he said he had never sat at one of his own wine dinners before, and so he was, you know, we remember that experience.
Yes, absolutely. It's very interesting.
And I got to talk with Floyd throughout the dinner about the food, and I got to meet Rajiv. He's going to come on the show. But one of the most interesting things I found, because I like the wines, and I was fully prepared to go and not like
and
the wines.
And despise the wines, expecting almost to not like the wines.
You know, I thought if Floyd was involved, I was going to at least think they were okay, but I didn't know that we'd be talking about it on the show. As it turns out, we're going to have Rajiv on the show. He's agreed to come on the show. They have a Sauvignon Blanc that I liked, a Shiraz that I liked, a Chenin Blanc that I liked. I was very surprised to do it. How they grow the grapes out there, because it's so hot. They've tricked the vines, right? And what they do is they grow the grapes over the winter.
Interesting.
And when the summer comes, they prune them back. And so they throw them into a false hibernation. So they prune the vines twice a year. They don't want them growing in the summer. It's too warm.
And so they just keep pruning them and not
and
letting it
Well, they prune it back a second time, so it tricks it into a sort of a hibernation, because the vines never go dormant because it's not cold.
Right.
And so they grow the grapes over the winter, and then throw the vines into a false dormancy over the summer.
That's really
interesting. I just think that's really totally
because otherwise they would just get too ripe too fast. And that's we talk about growing grapes and things like that, and I'll just get egg-heady for a while. Grapes just need the longer the growing season, the longer we call it hang time, the time they spend on the vines, the more complex your grapes will get. And if your grapes the balance there is you want your grapes to get ripe but not too ripe.
90% of the wine sold in India. It's growing at about a third per year. They've been doing it since 1999. It's received tremendous success. And one of the things that's really interesting is they have 25 acres that their concern hold, and they're contracting it out to other people in the region who've now come to realize that there are other winemakers now there as well. There are 24 mm-hmm. winemakers where there were none. But it looks like the Sula wines have the most focus on quality. But one of the reasons they have to go to these small farmers is there's a holdover sort of socialist law in India that no individual can hold more than 25 acres. So they have 200 acres under vine and another 500 that they purchase grapes from and 250 under contract. But no
owned
individual,
by a bunch of people.
But no, but so the, aside from that, they still have to buy a lot of their grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is, no individual in India can hold more than 25 acres, but agricultural income is tax-free. That's very interesting. It's a little socialist. Well, it's a lot socialist, but but it's very interesting. And if you look at the great wine regions of the world, one of the greatest wine regions of the world is Burgundy, which for different reasons, the average acreage held by an individual in Burgundy is 2.2 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And so this sort of enforced small holding by a bunch of small farmers can really do a lot for the quality of this region. It's a brand new wine producing region in the world. The wines are very distinct, and they went really great with Floyd Cardoz's amazing food. So we're going to have Rajiv on, and Floyd Cardoz is coming out with a book called One Spice, Two Spice. It'll be out in October. He's agreed to come on the show again and talk about
it. We'll definitely have Floyd come to back on the show when his book comes out. He was a really interesting guy, and like I said, something that is almost anomalous in this business is a super nice guy at the same time.
And we're going to bring Sula wines into the state because I want to get three of them onto the restaurant wine list. That's how well I think of them. They come from Nashik in India, and it'll take us a while to get them through the regulatory hurdles, but we'll get them soon. You should watch for them. And you can find out information about them on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be joined a little bit later in the show with Jane Stern. Jane and Michael Stern wrote the amazing tome Road Food, and their new book is out called Two for the Road. It's a food Bible of America. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Margaret Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Jane and Michael Stern are contributing editors to Gourmet Magazine. They're the authors of Road Food, and they've been on the show to talk about that book. They have achieved a Lifetime Achievement Award from the James Beard Foundation, and Michael's been on the show before, and now we're lucky enough to have Jane with us to talk about their new book, Two for the Road, Our Love Affair with American Food.
Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming to talk with us. We got the pair now. We got
I
one
know,
in the
I know, and I get to do it all by myself without Michael. How cool is that?
I get the bookends here on one end and the other. Now, Two for the Road. Why don't you now? Road Food is like everyone who's a serious foodie about him and likes, you know, traveling and real Americana has read Road Food. What's Two for the Road about?
Two Rockford Road is the stories behind road food. Road food has become kind of, as you said, an eater's Bible, you mm-hmm. know, a classic. It first came out in 1973, and every 3 years, Michael and I republish it, and the new edition comes out. During our years on the road, and Michael and I have been traveling for over 30 years, people have often said, you know, it would be my fondest wish if I fondest seat of your car with you when you travel all over America looking for good food. So, you know, since we can't put everybody in America in the back seat of our car, Two for the Road is kind of a virtual reality tour. What are our highlights and lowlights of life on the road for over 30 years?
Jana, just a quick question. You've been doing this book since 73, so here we are 33 years later. Are there a lot of restaurants that are still in the book that were in that first book?
Amazingly, yes. You know, Michael always said that when we started doing road food, that he felt like he was documenting a dying culture, you know, that with the onslaught of all fast foods and franchises, that we were sure that the little mom-and-pop cafes that we wrote about would probably not be in existence in 10 years. Well, as you said, here we are 30-whatever years later, and not only maybe I'd say 50% of the originals still there, but every time Michael and I go out on the road, we find new ones. So it is not a dying culture at all.
Well, now, what has been the effect of, I mean, obviously in the last 30 years, we've seen fast food go from a small segment of the retail dining economy to, you know, an overwhelming force on restaurants in America, especially when you get outside the major cities. What effect have the fast food joints had on the kind of places that you go to, and how do the places you go to differ from those fast food places?
Well, that's a very interesting question. On one hand, yes, they have taken business away from the small town cafes. When we started on the road, you know, you'd pull into a little place in, let's say, Nawbonne, Indiana, and there would be one town cafe. That was it. It was either good or it was bad. Now, the cafe may or may not be in business, but there are probably five fast food franchises within 10 miles away. On the other hand, fast food is fast food. And even though we write about cheap eats, we write about barbecues, and we write about hot dog places and where to get a great hamburger, you could not – let's see, how can I explain this? A good piece of meat in a barbecue pit has to be tended for 18 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fast food. That's slow food.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't put that on a corporate, you know, table and make it make sense. Where if you're a pit master in Valdosta, Georgia, you just love barbecue and you are willing to stand there all day with a mop and a bucket of barbecue sauce and, you know, and nurse this thing along.
But I think the beauty of road food is what happens when you travel across the country? You try and look for something familiar. And why do so many people go into fast food restaurants or even some of the Denny's and places like that that are more sit down type restaurants, but are broad changed? The reason they go into those restaurants is because they know what to expect because they're familiar. But a book like Road Food, what it does is it takes some of those places that are more indigenous to their area and makes them more familiar,
like,
and
you're not going to know by the sign outside what it is inside, you know?
Right. Well, you know, I think the Holiday Inn many years ago came up with the slogan, no surprises. And I kind of like that when I'm in my pajamas. I don't want any surprises. On the other hand, you know, when you're on the road looking for good foods, it's nice to expand your vocabulary of what to eat. And if you're in Nebraska, you might want to try Runza's. If you're in Iowa, you want to know where the best pork tenderloin is. And It's not that it's scary food. It's fabulous food. You just have to know where to go to get it.
You know, and that's because I have a motorcycle, and my the way that I sort of like to vacation and relieve stress is just get on the bike and go, like, look for blue highways down south and out in the Midwest. And if you don't know where you're going, it can really seem like there's nothing out there to eat because except for fast food. Mm-hmm. But with a book like Road Food, you can find some places like that.
Well, you know, we don't want our readers to just wander, you know, aimlessly looking for, you know, a grilled cheese sandwich that they might find. So this takes a lot of the worry, but it doesn't take the adventure out of traveling. We also have a website, which is free to use, called roadfood.com, and you can use it to plot your trip from point A to point B anywhere in the United States.
And if you're a nut like I am, I'm as likely to use the Road Food Guide to plot my journey on the blue highways to get from one place to another. Hey, we have to take a quick break. We'll be back with Jane Stern, author of Road Food and Two for the Road, her new book, which you can find out about on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagatta and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Jane Stern. Together with her husband, Michael, they wrote the amazing food Bible of America called Road Food, and their most recent book is called Two for the Road. We're talking about how to go from place to place across the country and find yourself in little independently owned, unique joints, as it were. I find that when I travel out in the Midwest, that it's harder to find these places than it is for me in the Northeast and in this sort of megalopolis of cities along the Northeast seaboard. Is it harder to find stuff in the middle of the country than it is in, say, San Francisco, New York, New Jersey, or is it just that I don't know what I'm looking for?
I don't think it's harder. In fact, we find it easier, but I'm just curious why you have that problem. Is it that when you get into a little bit, when you, you know, it goes kaflooey because you're used to big cities?
I think it's more that they're just less written about them. And so we haven't, you know, seen the big magazines talking about little places.
But also I think with independent places, like if I'm riding through, I was riding through West Virginia on my motorcycle a couple of years back, and I was just going because the highway looked nice. So when I got to a town, I didn't have Road Food with me, and I just sort of, you know, in Jersey, I think diners are always a moderately safe bet. And mm-hmm. I didn't find as many things like that even down south, and I found a lot of chain stuff like Eaton Park, and like in Florida, it seems to me to be mostly chains. I don't even see that many independently owned restaurants as I drive by.
Yeah, well, you know, I guarantee you, if you spent more time in those little towns, your road food radar would get more acute. There are subtle symbols and things you have to look for. For instance, if it's 5 o'clock in the morning, is this cafe where all the pickup trucks and the sheriff's car are? Because the locals always know where the good food is.
Mm, look for the sheriff. I like that one.
Right, yeah. Right. The town barber will always tell you where the good place to eat is. Poor Michael always starts a trip with long hair and winds up like a skinhead at the end of the day. He gets to stop in every barber shop.
And says, just a little shorter? Just a little shorter?
A little bit shorter, right. You know, I think this sounds goofy, but we have had wonderful luck at barbecues that have giant plaster pigs or neon signs of dancing pigs on them, on the roof. And similarly, small-town steakhouses that have a big plaster bull or Is it bull, steer? I forget what steaks are. On the roof is where you want to eat.
Our guest is Jane Sterr. Jane Sterr, and her book is Two for the Road. And she's telling us how to find, if you don't have her book handy, which you should, she's telling us how to find great food when you're on the road and developing your own road food radar. After the news, we'll talk to her just a little bit more. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Jane Sterr, together with her husband Michael. She wrote Road Food, that's updated every year or so, and for 30 years now, and their new book is called Two for the Road, about their adventures traveling across America, finding the best food on the road. We were talking about sort of the telltale signs that you use when you travel through a new town looking for the new places. We talked about visiting a local barbershop, not a bad idea. We talked about looking for the sheriff's car in the morning where they have breakfast because they always know where the good places are. And looking for, if you're looking for a steakhouse, for a big cow on the roof. For lobster, the same thing hold true? Big lobster on the roof?
I've never seen a big lobster on the roof, but in Maryland we have a number of road food places. I think at least three that have giant crabs. On the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think just big animals on the roof in general is a good sign.
You also mentioned that down south there's a correlation between the quality of a restaurant and the number of crosses and Christian images on the wall.
Yeah, which is kind of, you know, weird for two East Coast Jews, which Michael and I are, to point this out. But we really have found that some of the great foods, the great little restaurants and cafes in the Deep South are where people go and eat after church. So, you know, if you kind of can stake out a church and watch where everybody is going afterwards, that's the great place to eat.
I love
it. You guys are staking out churches?
Well, I know, doesn't that
sound
creepy?
It does sound a little creepy.
As soon as that came out of my mouth, I thought, oh my God, that sounds like lunatic.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, all of your experiences on the road can't be positive. So do you ever, you follow your road food radar, you follow the suggestion of the local barber, and you get there, and it's just, it's not mediocre, it's just wrong.
Oh, I mean, I cannot tell you. Well, I don't have to tell you because I just wrote a book about it. But Two for the Road has some of our worst experiences. For starters, in St. Louis, which gets to be incredibly hot and humid in the middle of the summer, we went into a restaurant 2 years ago and sat down at an unair-conditioned table, and we looked to see what was propping the front door open, and was an uncooked chicken.
Ooh,
so
nice.
That's not, to me, real appetizing.
Ooh. Nice.
Right. Really another place, actually also in St. Louis, is a C&K barbecue where their specialty is a pig ear sandwich, which just looks like a giant triangular flap of pig ear. And
which, of course, it is.
Which is exactly what it is.
I thought you guys liked authentic.
Well, not that authentic. I make Michael eat all that stuff. And a snoot sandwich, which I think in the East we would call snout.
No, snoot. What restaurant was that?
That's C&K Barbecue also. Now, at least with the snoot or snout, they have the good sense to fry it.
They deep. Actually, I had the woman who owns that restaurant on this show because last year she came up for the Big Apple Barbecue.
Oh, really?
And it was one of the most quotable quotes we've ever had on the show.
What'd you say?
And that Big Apple Barbecue, by the way, is coming up in New York City, Madison Square Park shortly.
June 10th.
And you can find out about that on our website as well. We're going to cover that. But what she said when I interviewed her, we're the only place in the country that really serves snoot, and it's not snout. And she's talking about the snoot, and she tells me what it is, and she's got a real thick accent. And I said, so snoot, huh? And she said, yep. Our motto is, it's two mottos.
We eat the whole hog.
No, she said, we've got it, come and get it. And the other thing she said is, we have the whole hog from the rooter to the tutor.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Oh, I don't need that much of the whole hog. I just want the middle section.
Over the trotters, right?
Yeah,
the
exactly.
From the rooter to the tutor.
Exactly.
From the rooter to the tutor.
Oh,
love that one. All right. To change topics, you did a short stint as local restaurant reviewers, and you got a lot of hate mail, right? Didn't like the local stuff.
Yeah, it was for the Hartford Courant, and it was actually a rather lengthy stint. I think we were there 4 or 5 years, and we were like serious, you know, big city restaurant reviewers where we would give 0 stars to 4 stars. And the funniest thing, and to this day I can't figure it out, is whenever we got hate mail, which we did quite frequently, it always said, Jane Stern is such a horrible person, and poor Michael is married to her. Now, how people got that going, because it was just Jane and Michael Stern. You know, we didn't say Jane said this, Michael said that. But I guess, you know, somehow they assumed Michael was this happy eater, and I was like this nasty wife, you know? I mean, I don't know.
My wife gets the same mail, except they're right.
Oh, God. Oh, no, I don't believe that.
No, no, they're right. Yeah, that's definitely they're right.
Both sounds so sweet.
Yeah, well, we did it on the radio. It's
our radio persona. Our, you know, meet us
okay.
In the
well, Michael and I are speaking out church.
I got to tell you one funny story. It didn't really happen, but there was a guy who owned a restaurant in our town where we used to work, and he got an unfavorable review. And frankly, you know, I'm the first to admit we've never had a really unfavorable review, but we've had some criticisms in our reviews that we look at and we're like, you know, they're exactly right, you know, and we get hired as consultants a lot by people who get lousy restaurant reviews, so I don't mind it at all. It's money in my pocket,
right?
Because they want to turn them around. But this guy got an unfair review, and so did another guy in our town. And they were talking one day, and he came up and he said, they were talking about a restaurant critic in New York, and he said that also reviews in Jersey. And they were going to take out a full-page ad that said, New York's worst restaurant critic hates, and then the name of their 2 restaurants.
Wow.
And I thought it was I thought they should have gone for that one.
Well, you know, when you get a bad review, and I mean, as an author of 40 books, I can assure you I've gotten my share of bad reviews over the years, you feel so powerless. You know, even though your friends and your family are saying, don't worry, and the person's crazy, you just feel like there's nothing you can do to retaliate. So I think taking out an ad like that is a wonderful idea.
Well, but the idea was it had to have humor in it.
Because, of course.
Like, Jane,
yeah.
You know what we did?
What?
We got ourselves a radio show.
We
can retaliate anytime we want.
Every day, 5 days a week, we'll retaliate. Now, you want to tell us, you talked about, you know, being 2 Jews from the East Coast hanging out, staking out churches down south. Questionably dangerous.
Creepy.
How did you get on the KKK Christmas card list?
That was actually when we worked for Connecticut Magazine, and I guess Stern is not the most Gentile name. So this is when I think the Grand Klegel or Clud or something was living
let's
in
call
Connecticut.
Him, let's call him the Grand Clud because I like
that.
It. I'm sure it's wrong, but
right.
Let's call him that.
He was the Grand something or other. And every Christmas he used to send us a Christmas card, care of Connecticut Magazine, saying, you know, that the Ku Klux Klan extends their, you know, their fondest wishes for you on this holiday season, you know, which is kind of weird.
Why did they do that?
Do I know? Why did they exist?
Well,
you know,
that's true.
I mean, it's very strange.
I got one of those once as I was bartending. A guy left me a card, and they, you know, cowardly, whatever he is, he leaves me the card, right? And on the back of the card says, "You've just been patronized by a member of the United Clans of America." Oh, you know what it said to me? You know what was really offensive? It said, "You're white today because your parents practiced racial." And I thought, come back. Why didn't you give me that when you were in the bar? Why you throw you out?
Well, listen, having grown up and spent my time at Rutgers and the streets of New Brunswick, I'm a pretty tough cookie. So, you know, things don't scare me.
What were your favorite places to eat when you were at Rutgers in New Brunswick?
Oh, my God. You know, I knew you were going to ask me that. And honestly, I can't remember a single one because I was so busy chasing boys.
Come on. You didn't go to Greasy Tony's?
No, I don't think I did. Oh. I remember there was like a place in Rutgers called The Ledge.
Oh yeah, pizza place. Sure.
And all I did was eat ice cream there, you know, all day, every day, every day. I think, you know, I was like 19 years old or something. I didn't have any money, and I was just boy crazy.
I think it's some fancy schmancy restaurant now.
Probably.
Yeah. Anyway, well, our guest is Jane Stern. Her current book is 2 for the Road that she wrote with her husband Michael, and also the food Bible that you've got to have if you're traveling around the country. Even if you're not planning on it, just buy it. If you don't even read it, just put it in the trunk so that you can know where to go to get good food. food across America. It's called Road Food. You can go to their website.
Roadfood.com.
It's a tremendous resource. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. We're having a lovely time talking with Jane Stern. She and her husband, Michael, wrote the food Bible, Road Food. And their new book that you should really go and pick up is called Two for the Road, Our Love Affair with American Food. And I'm not kidding about road food. I mean, it's updated, what, every year, Jane?
We do it every 2 years, but we update the website every day.
The website's great if you're wireless, but if you want to be not wireless, I never travel the country. You know, I take my bike and just head out in a direction. That's my favorite way to spend a vacation. Throw road food in the saddlebags, because, you know, if you're the kind of person who listens to the show, you're probably the kind of person who's willing to go 20 miles out of your way to find the great hamburger.
What kind of bike do you drive?
Harley Davidson, a 93 Heritage Softail Classic with an old school paint job. It's
really
sweet.
God, how cool.
You guys
are
boring the tears out of me. So, Jane, have you guys gotten to all the restaurants in the country yet?
No. That was our plan originally, was to review every restaurant in America.
How's that working out for you?
It didn't work out too well. So we decided after about 3 months of where we didn't get out of Guilford, Connecticut, where we lived. In fact, we didn't get beyond the A's in the yellow pages, that we better just get on the road and see what was out there. We just got back from, you know, I mean, I know you're going to be very jealous because it's so glamorous, but we just got back from Akron, Ohio.
Oh, my God,
and
Akron. I hear it's beautiful this time of year.
Oh, it is. It is beautiful. A house.
We're going to get hate mail from Akron now. Thanks, Francis.
You can buy a beautiful house for $60,000, and they have the greatest regional specialty, which is deep-fried sauerkraut balls. So, you know, who knew?
I think this country's just gone too far with its deep fryer.
Hold on a second. You got to describe for us deep fried sauerkraut balls, because by the description so far, I'm not going to Akron for them. Tell me about deep fried sauerkraut balls.
Well, you know, I'm not sure how they make them. They obviously, you know, squeeze the liquid out of the sauerkraut and roll them in flour and deep fry them, but they're delicious.
Hmm.
I mean, Akron has an enormous Serbian and Hungarian population, and in fact, on the corner of practically every street is like a little mom and pop Serbian or Hungarian restaurant, and you know, you can get a full, you know, chicken paprikash meal for $3.99. I mean, it's really delicious.
I used to live in New Brunswick above a little Hungarian restaurant that was here forever. It was called Sardas. And it was right across from St. Ladislaus Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
That explains why your suit smelled the way it did.
And they did. I did smell a little like paprika.
You got the sauerkraut balls in your pocket.
Well, but it wasn't sauerkraut balls, but you could go and get goulash or whatever for dinner, and it would cost you, as a college student, like $3, you know, for table service food.
And right, it's good stuff.
I want to throw out a question to you. It's a quote that I've used on the show before, but it's one of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite food writers, Calvin Trillin.
Uh-huh.
And he used to say when he would write about food traveling the country, he would always show up in some small town in podunk nowhere, and he would always be met by someone who knew that he, for whatever business he was on, people always knew that he wrote about food as well wherever he went. And he'd say, you know, I'd be met by the mayor of a small town as I got off the plane, who would assure me that they had a wonderful French restaurant in town. And he said he always wanted to respond, no, you don't.
Well, I would like to know why for 35 years Michael and I have never had a welcoming committee in any town. No mayor has ever welcomed us. I'd like to know what Trillin is doing that we haven't been doing.
Jane,
no keys to the city for you guys?
No.
Jane, you tell us when you're coming to New Brunswick. We'll talk to the mayor.
The mayor will be there.
We'll see if we can get the mayor in.
We'll get New Brunswick marching band.
You got a dinner date.
So now, do you find that the best American food is really sort of not celebrated and the people in their areas, you know, they have a fancy French restaurant that's, you know, $25 an entree, but the real good food is you know, more local at a local diner?
You know, when Michael and I started writing Road Food, the only travel guide was the mobile guide, and the only kind of restaurants they wrote about were, you know, like the continental cuisine atop the spinning space needle. But those places have kind of gone by the wayside, and, you know, needless to say, there are very, very fancy restaurants still around the country. But I think our regional food is being celebrated now in a way that it never was before, and, you know, hopefully we have a little to do with it.
Do you think that regional food is getting better because of it's getting more recognition?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, here comes the Food Network cameras, so you better be cooking mm-hmm. something pretty good.
Yeah, and I think the more and more people use food as a reason to go to a destination.
Well, I mean, gosh, you know, if somebody said the best ribs in America are, you know, a three-hour drive west, you could be sure I would be in my car very, very quickly.
Yeah, fair enough. So, Jane, I just have one last question for you. 33 years riding in a car together all the time, eating meals together. Let me put it this way. Frances and I, we've been partners in the restaurant for about 14 years, friends for about 10 years. Since then,
I no longer care for Mark.
And we don't even sleep together.
Oh, God.
So,
well,
oh, God.
Maybe that's the secret. I don't know. Can I suggest?
No, I decline.
No, you cannot. Sorry.
It's a great diffuser of tension, I can tell you.
Well, I know that, but not with Mark.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and I think that might add some tension to my relationship to Jennifer.
Well, that's true.
So what's the secret? You guys still happy? You still enjoy each other's company?
Oh, God, yeah. We've just, you know, we've been blessed with a wonderful life, and we're about to celebrate our 35th, you know, anniversary. And I think the success is that we're both very passionate about what we do. And, you know, Michael is a very focused, intense guy. I'm a little more happy-go-lucky. But when we get in the car, we always feel like, you know, Peter Pan or something, like we're, you know, we don't want to grow up. We're running away, and this is like a big adventure. And, you know, we're at the age now where all our friends are retiring, and
Jane,
feel like we haven't even started yet.
Jane, hold on one second. I'm going to hold you over to the last segment. Hold on one second. We'll come right back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking to fellow Rutgers alum Jane Stern, with her husband, author of Road Food, an American Bible of food across America, and Two for the Road, our love affair with American food.
Now, Jane, through Road Food all these years, you've been telling us about all the great stories and all the great places that you've been to and how exciting it is to go along your travels. Two for the Road has a slightly different edge to it. You give us some of the background and less, let's say, pleasantries of the business.
Yeah, we, you know, in Two for the Road, we have a little more leeway and a little more fun than in Road Food. And we tell you about, you know, our worst restaurant experiences, the most scary motels that we ever stayed in, nutty people we went along, you know, we met along the road. And even how Michael and I accidentally walked into Leavenworth Prison without knowing it.
Whoops.
I'll let you figure that one out.
I just, you got to read the book. You know, that's all.
You got it.
That's the way. Now, we only have a minute, but you eat like 12 meals a day when you're on the road?
We both do. Yeah, don't point the finger at me.
It was a plural.
Right,
a plural.
Michael has a yogurt. No, 12 meals a day.
How do you guys eat 12 meals a day?
Well, we don't finish them.
Right.
You know, if we come across a superior, wonderful, fabulous meal, yes, we, you know, we clean our plates. But, you know, if we go to 12 10 restaurants a day, and we get, you know, icky food or mediocre food, we just, you know, we just kind of say, give us the check, please.
That sounds like a heck of a lot of work.
Jane,
it is. It's eat, 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 drive, 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 right, 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 sleep, 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 eat, eat, eat.
Wow.
That doesn't
right,
sound
right,
so bad. So, Jane, I just want to tell you quickly, whenever Francis does that when we're interviewing a chef, if Francis doesn't like it, he will just leave it there, and the chef will come out and be like, oh, I guess.
Actually,
me, I'm like, oh, I gotta, let's scrape this somewhere into the garbage or somewhere
well,
where he won't see.
You guys need to carry a purse. Because I have a purse, and I line it with hefty bags, and when the when the waitress or waiter goes away, I just plop everything in my purse.
Very bizarre. We got to run. News is coming up. Jane Stern, the book is Two for the Road, Our Love Affair with American Food. Thanks for being on the show, Jane.
Thank you
so much.
Super sweet. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. Pick up the book. Find it on the website, restaurantguysradio.com. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.